So, CMask viewers, we come back to you today with an episode on praxis, praxeology, specifically how to keep relationships together. And it's nice because what we offer is the one bite of the apple rule, which is a single unitary rule that, if practiced well, will fix 95% of any man-woman relationship problems. So this is something that can't really does apply to marriage, but as a kind of virtual habituation, it should be practiced during dating. So everything we're going to say today applies not only to marriage, but to dating as well. Mike, Nick, Will, how are you guys doing today? Good to see you all. We skipped last Friday, and hopefully everybody's rested up and feeling better and charged back up.
Doing well.
Yeah, happy to be back, boys.
And Will, are you feeling better? You were actually physically down. You better?
Yeah, we had some sort of flu thing, but we're feeling good now. Took a few days.
Brutal. Yeah, over the last like 5 weeks, a week before Christmas, my family and I have been sick, like three of them, I think, with two or three different bugs. There's just so much going around. Anyway, so today's episode is really something that can be practiced starting right away. The one bite of the apple. And it's something I've never written on. It doesn't appear in my most recent book on praxis for how to keep a married relationship together, and probably should have gone in there. One bite of the apple. It's premised on directly on man, woman ontology, if you will, for lack of a better term. And it's basically the prime duty of a man is to love his wife. The prime duty of a woman is to respect her husband's rules. And so what we mean by one bite of the apple is that when you take a married couple, John and Sally, who are intelligent in today's demographical context of everyone goes to college, let's say they're both somewhat accomplished and they don't get married at 20, they get married at 30. Both John and Sally have had, let's say they've had careers that they're proud of, and mainly including Sally, maybe getting promotions, being elevated for accomplishments, not only of the body, but of the mind at our workplace. The problematic for marriage, most on point, there are several problematics that this poses, is namely the biggest one, that it's impossible to ask Sally to enter into a marriage. It's not realistic to ask her to enter into a marriage and just be a wife. I mean, that's basically what's framed to me, to Will, to Mike, question after question after question, email during coaching, things like that. If we operate on some caricatured basis of being a wife, where she's just a doormat. For one thing, that's never what we're saying to do, but to submit in all things is not a doormat, nor was Sally a doormat at her job, even though she's not CEO, we'd point out. But the problem is this: how do you reasonably expect her to not have a swollen ego from everything that had happened? And a lot of the accomplishments are based on DEI principles. We get that, but she's accomplished some real things. The one bite of the apple rule guarantees that she too, within the context of marriage, the confines of marriage, will feel good. It's this. It's a sacred promise between the man and the woman, also holds for people who are dating, that the man will, look, you have one, I do value your input. Same as maybe, as corny as the analogy is, maybe like a boardroom meeting. I want to hear from you. But like a boardroom meeting, it's actually not a bad model. You tender it, and then you be quiet. And the boss is going to take this whatever direction he can. You feel heard, though, because you are a valued member of the team, demonstrably so. And I promise that even if I tell you no, I've heard a pitch like this morning, so this one, just give it an 8 seconds. Or I might say, give me a 10-minute elaboration on this and go with it eventually. Or I might say, give me a 10-minute elaboration on this and say, No, thanks. But whether it's situation A, I pretty much just shut it down almost right away because I just heard it. B, you prevail after adumbrating your plan. Or C, you don't prevail after adumbrating your plan. You will be heard. That's a sacred promise from man to woman. And the woman's promise is very straightforward. She act no different than she would in a boardroom. Okay, yes, sir, to her boss at work. And she just say, okay, well, yeah, whichever way you go, boss, I will support the decision quietly and even enthusiastically quietly, because that's what a boss really can do, is he has the discretionary authority to say, I like it, I like this plan, let's go with it, or I don't like it, we're going to go the direct opposite, and you, Miss Wife, Sally, can be asked to support even the direct opposite. So we Steph and I have been doing coaching. And every single couple will say, go implement this for a week. And they said, this is a world of difference. I've given this advice for a bit of time now. I'm interested, Nick, I'll go to you first. As a newlywed, this is advice that we gave you guys as a newlywed. What do you think? General thoughts. We'll start with each of the three of your general thoughts, starting with the newlywed.
Yeah, you told us this in person, and then obviously you did the show on it recently. But like all marriage advice, I've found it requires a lot of iterations of being reminded of something, trying it out in different contexts, not doing it well, you know, because what you're describing here isn't something that's like, okay, Nick, you go start doing this, start behaving this way. It's like an agreement between two people. So that requires a collaboration. First thoughts on it are, if man is perfected via fatherhood and leadership and woman is perfected via submission and motherhood, then this should... The lens through which I'm trying to analyze this bit of advice is, does it make me a better leader and does it make her a better follower? And I still feel like I'm trying to find my sea legs. And so sometimes I might be wrong more than one time in a row. So that's where I'm concerned, where, like, I guess I wouldn't say concerned, but the question arises for me, if I'm wrong the first time and my wife is correct, and neither of us know what the actual, like, if the cat's dead or alive in the box yet, like, we have to go through the situation to figure out who was more prudent, who was more, had more foresight. And I say, no, okay, thank you for the bite of the apple. I actually think we should do this. And it's not ego driven or anything. It's literally just, this was my assessment of the situation and we're going to go with it. And then I turn out to be incorrect. Is it better for me? Like, which way do I learn to be a better leader? Is it from having tried what she suggested the first time, like didn't go for it? Or is it through the failure and then recognizing whatever attributes gave rise to her answer and trying to adopt them? That's what I can't quite figure out.
Do you iterate?
Yeah.
What do you mean, like, wrong? Because generally this is the situation that this applies to, I'd say 99 times out of 100 is, hey, we're going to start putting the kid to bed early tonight. You know, where there's not a binary right, wrong answer. What's God's bedtime for us? You know, anything like that. This is 99% of marital arguments, where it's just the husband says, hey, you know, I have the discretionary authority to enact this prudential edict. Let's do it. Where there's not a right and wrong, but what did you have in mind? I suppose 1% of the time we could fathom a right, wrong issue that hasn't been talked about with the church. Because a woman always has the right to say, like, no, I'm not going to do contraception. But what could you give an example about something you might be wrong about objectively in the eyes of the eternal law that you wouldn't already know? Those don't usually exist. It's not with guys like you.
Yeah, those Those less so. And what I've found is that like the bell curve in terms of frequency of disagreements aren't on those things, which is why like I have such a an enjoyable friendship with my wife is because that middle 80% of disagreements has nothing to do with like real matters of prudence and real matters of morality, like of high consequence. But I can definitely feel friction arise with stuff. So this is just total off the cuff example. I don't even know if we've discussed or had friction on this, but like for me to go lift at the gym because of how far away it is and the type of training that I do is it's a chunk of time. It's about a 4 hour commitment. It's like 35 minutes of driving and then the coaching itself. And so, for example, today I'm not going to the gym because I have, as the audience knows, a tremendous amount of while we ted it. But I'm also like committed to maintaining that. So if she was like, I don't think you should go to the gym today. Like it's going to take so much of your time. And I'm like, no, I thanks. I hear what you're saying, but I have to stay disciplined on this. And then by the end of the day, it's like I've gotten 45 minutes of editing done. I was like, shoot, she was totally right. I should have just taken her advice on something. Now, is that moral? Like, not really, but she totally saw that coming. And so what I don't know is like at the end of the day, when I'm getting into bed and I'm like, man, I did 45 minutes of work. What strategy would have made me a better leader? Listening to her. Knowing how to listen to her, or getting to the end of the day and going, I need better foresight. How did she come to that conclusion and I didn't? And then figuring out how to adopt that foresight, I guess, is where my brain's at with this.
So, I mean, like the pre, I want to hear what Mike and Will say, because they've been married a little longer. But remember, it's two separate questions to ask. How do I learn as a moral agent to make the best on the spot judgments using my practical reason? Totally different question, whether you're married or not. Question for Book Six of Aristotle, the Ethics. But what we're dealing with is how to tighten up married relations, particularly for people who are suffering from the most common problem today, feminism. So the problematic is 100% B, it's 0% how to actually get strong efficiently, which is really what you're talking about in your hypo. And there's a distinct outcome that might be different. Like, you basically on the model we're discussing already win, because your wife, you're saying, well, she'll already just tender and then accept. So what you might identify as a problem, because everyone's got problems in their lives, is the practical problem of like, I actually just need like 28 hours in a day. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how to basically get your women under control.
And
Western
so I might
civilization.
not be the best first example for that because of, again, the edge cases are for us might be what the average person experiences most of the time, the 80% of the time. I would say my current strategy is on matters like I go to my wife for counsel all the time, sort of an open discussion. I know it's quite similar to you, Tim, but I think I have a similar termination point where if there's something that like is I know she kind of, I think she kind of gets the vibe, the understanding that, all right, conversation's sort of over before it starts here. Like Nick's decided and we're just gonna go do this thing. It's not really open for a discussion on some of the more important or immediately practical matters. And basically in all other instances, it's an open conversation that I really benefit from.
Sure. Okay. So Mike, I'll remind everyone, like, this is a simple pledge. The husband's like, you differ from our children, for people who have children, or a child abstractly, insofar as there's an iterative capacity where I want to come to you for advice. You are a kind of advisor, but you're more like, let's use this one, a king's war council. 50% of the time, assuming we only go to war 50% of the time, will your advice be heeded? But I want your advice 100% of the time, even if at most I'll take your advice 50% of the time. I might listen to my peace counsel 60% of the time. And I don't want any bitterness or backlash. That's what you, what I want from you, is just give me your best advice at the time. And I can sort of cut you off at any time. But my pledge is that I really do value your opinion. And I will never say no just to be a contrarian. All you need to give me, this is one bite of the apple, is your best one-time iteration of what, well, you know, whatever I'm asking, or you can even tender it unsolicited. Just give your best. And then afterwards, the most important, all the work, all the remedial work to heal, to salve the wound of Western civilization feminism comes when, in those instances, when I say, no, that's really smart, but no, I'm going to do the opposite. You can have no retaliation, no acts of redress really at all. Silent, loud, medium volume, nothing. Just actually help me enact the opposite of what you just told me. That's one bite of the apple. And so it doesn't really subject itself to cases where we're not saying that it will make you make the best decision, man. That has nothing to do with it, or the most efficient or anything like that. You have to come to building the muscle of prudence on your own. And that will take time. The way Aristotle says, it's not habit. Prudence is a function of time and experience only. A totally different question. But in terms of not being yelled at or have silent fits or have crying fits or anything from the ladies, that's what we're trying to heal. That's what's tearing apart pretty much every guy-girl relationship out there. You know, 9 out of 10 of them. Mike, how would this, if you were to implement it in your home, work out? What do you think about it, et cetera?
Well, I think in terms of prudence, I think when you quoted Aristotle, that is ultimately what it comes down to, is time and experience. Because in our household, I mean, it's definitely shifted from the beginning to now. And I'm much a guy that needs to learn through failure of making the, not the incorrect decision, but the less correct decision, because it's less so binary than in most instances, like Tim, you were saying. The biggest thing is cohesion in a household, right? And I know my wife values being heard and feeling like she's part of the team. That is the biggest variable in navigating around these fits, or from resentment starting to build. Because oftentimes I think guys, when they think about patriarchy, they think about this kind of household dynamic. They think about either it is the tyrannical man that just, you know, smashes the hammer down, makes all the decisions, and the woman has no room to speak. Or it's the opposite, which most of the time, most guys fall into this camp, where it's just complete capitulation. The guy doesn't want to deal with it. He doesn't want to deal with the pressure. Both are problems. It's coming to the table, coming together, and establishing that trust, and also understanding that it's not just a question of trust. It's also a matter of grace, because both of you are going to make mistakes with the improper or less correct decision. Grace has to come into play, and ultimate trust has to come into play. And so in my household, it's quite simple. My wife wants to be part of the decision making, insofar as it is just a conversation. What I'm trying to say is she wants to have the conversation. She ultimately knows it's my final say, but she wants to feel part of the team. She wants to feel heard. And I want to do this, and I grant this to her, not because I feel like I necessarily owe it, but it's also better for me, and also coming to these certain conclusions, right? Where I understand I have this say, but there have been many instances where I've come with a certain idea, wanting to present a certain discussion about a certain decision, and her opinion has swayed me, because at that time, it's more prudent than what I had in mind. And then there have been times, on the contrary, where it's been my decision, and the ensuing or potential argument that could have happened afterwards was quelled by the fact that there was just a discussion to begin with, that we're both part of the same squad. She knows I'm at the helm. I'm the captain. She's the first mate. I understand she's prudent. She has the best interest of our household in mind, but she also understands that I possess more logical, rational faculties, and I'm better equipped to make the right decision. And it's through failure of making the right decision at some points where I understand where she is better equipped to make certain decisions when it comes to the home. For example, my wife, like 99% of the time when it comes to matters of children bedtimes, changing them out from the crib into like the big girl bed, doing these things with our daughters in terms of like their, you know, where they're at in their youth, she's been right 99% of the time. So I'll have my say, I'll kind of put in my two piece, but she takes care of it. And I know, and I just defer that to her. I don't even think about it. And in other instances with matters of finance or when we moved here and when we built our house, et cetera, she knows he's got the best interest of the home in mind. I trust him to make these types of decisions. And I think coming to that place is a matter of experience, but quelling the argumentation comes from a matter of, are you guys operating as a team? And are you the one leading these conversations? Are she the one pestering you to have these conversations where you guys are coming to the table and acting like a team? That should be on the captain. That's on us men to facilitate.
Like, kind of like Nick, your wife, Mike, or like myself, or like Will, you're not struggling at this low level of just like manufacturing consent. Most of the people out there whose relationships are suffering, which are most people, they are looking by hook or by crook to manufacture consent with their wives, to have their wives buy into their leadership model, patriarchy. So when you say, okay, I want to make the very best decision, that means there's almost zero like wife generated externality, where you're just saying, hey, I want to tighten up my decisions. But actually what's happening by fact of the patriarchy is when you say, okay, well, these decisions I consistently run through my wife, or I consistently defer to her on if it's involving when to move the baby from the crib to the bed, et cetera. That's still your decision. It's just, you know, it's still got the seal of the exchequer court. You know, you stamped it. You're just saying, yeah, I'm going to go with what you think on this every time, which of course, you got a smart wife, and that's what a smart husband does. But when we say, oh, well, I just want to get better, I want greater efficiency, you know, I want to accomplish more in the day, I want more out of, I want to get in weightlifting and, you know, film editing, things like that. Yeah, that's a totally different question, even though it feels intimately bound up in what we're talking about. Because it is by substance, but we're prescinding from that. We're just saying we're putting ourselves in the shoes of people out there whose basic want and need is so much more rudimentary. It's just, most guys say to me, like, I have a wife where just she will not accept my authority. And so this is the problem that we're laying down here for men not to get contrarian in response to their contrarian wives. And this will solve it for you. If you lay it out, I will, as a promise, listen to you when I think you should be listened to. And in response to Nick, yeah, it's always got your stamp of authority. Even if you're like, okay, next time I'm going to do what my wife suggested and probably not go in. That doesn't diminish your authority. In fact, this reinforces the view that it's a king's decision whether he goes with war council or peace council. Will, what do you say?
So as I understand it, it's got two aims. One is to make sure the wife always feels heard, which is important. But the other one, I think even more important, is to make sure that the husband has the final say. And for the people you're talking about, I think you mentioned a couple who got married at 30 and the wife is very accomplished and not used to being submissive. I think that principle, that the husband has the final say, is the thing that's going to save a marriage, because patriarchy, it's a set of principles ultimately. And that one is probably one of the most important. The husband has the final say. So I can imagine the application of that principle doing a world of good to lots of marriages. The comments from Nick and from Mike, and I would echo this as well, concern more how many times the man might have that kind of dialogue with his wife. So maybe she doesn't have one bite at the apple. Maybe for some particular problems, it's a couple. And then he still has the final say, but he's actually got something out of that back and forth that goes beyond one bite that benefits him. And it's just more seeking counsel, and he makes a better decision as a result of it. So I think I really like the principles at play and what the spirit of the thing is. In terms of the actual implementation of it, does it have to be only one bite? I would say no. More so for younger couples, like maybe people are getting married in their early 20s and the man hasn't had enough years on the planet yet to develop his prudence. Because like you say, it is largely just a matter of age. Aristotle talks about one of the reasons why it's important to talk to your elders is that they just know stuff from you because they know more stuff than you because they've been alive longer than you. When you're a young guy, especially if you're kind of hot-headed and you've got various things that might make you, you know, hasty or proud or reluctant to seek counsel, I think it might actually be better to go for one, two, three, sometimes four or five bites at the apple, as long as you have that final say, just because your wife can probably help you think things through well. I've certainly found that getting married young and being someone who is quite hot-headed. I still have it now. Like after I was sacked and lots of people came crawling out of various institutions saying, hey, we could use you for this and coming up with all kinds of offers. My wife was pretty good at seeing through a lot of them and saying, look, they just want to use you for this. They're excited about you for themselves. They haven't got your best interests at heart. And part of me at the time, because my priority was trying to get my income back up, I didn't see that, right? And I wanted to go for some of the opportunities. And then it took more than one bite at the apple for her to actually get through my thick skull. And then in the end, I was, okay, I should have seen that the first time. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Will, are you guys talking about, I think all three of you are defining terms, analog terms here differently than the way they're intended in the image, the apple image. Are you saying it can be good if ever, because this would be antithetical to a husband having final say. Look, in your situation, Will, with sort of iterating ideas for what to do after being sacked, Mike's with bedtime, Nick's with you know, how to divide daily hours. I, you know, the husband, you, says, this is my final say on this one. I'm going. And there, and that you think it's an affirmative good thing for the wife to come back in that day, not if it arises again in a week or something, that, because that would be a separate situation. In that day, one bite of the apple means the goal is always, the wife says, okay, you know, you heard me out. That's the most I can ask. Cool. She might be right. And if so, the situation, probably the strength of this model resides in the fact that it probably, if it's an externality arising out of a procedurally flawed decision making by the husband, it'll probably re-arise. And if it arises again on another day, you know, under slightly different altered circumstances, it can come up again. And maybe that time, after he's seen his day not go the way he thought it would go, it's a separate apple. But I hear you guys say, if you say two, three, four, five bites of the apple, that means that violates the core principle of patriarchy, the way I'm hearing
think,
it. Which,
Tim,
is
that the nuance that you injected into this praxis is setting aside of the ego. So I think to answer your question very, very specifically, it would only be a good thing if the wife's return to take a second actual legitimate bite of the apple with, after husband said, nope, we're doing this. The only reason I think it could be tenable is if she wasn't doing it because she's like, I'm right and it's good that you know that I'm right, but rather I'm fighting for us as a team. Now, it violates the principle of unity under which governance itself, like, takes place. And so that itself is probably not a good. But I could see some things that are worth fighting for even after the man has said, like, no, that's it. Now, the reason why I'm separating the ego thing is to quote Ripperger, she's not going to get to heaven if she's trying to usurp her husband's authority. So if what she's trying to do is overthrow the husband because she's like, I can lead better, it's better for me to have the power, and it's like more of a personal aggrandizement, I think that's very damnable. If it's like
That would be
a
your intent, like, but intent is specifies form, means, you deliberate about means. So she's probably just deliberating, like, no, I just want my way here. And of course, the reason I would say that this analysis you're proffering, Nick, is flawed, is because it's a deliberative process that she has been invited into within very strict confines. So if a husband express the reason that one bite of the apple works and works absolutely is because she's being invited into a process of authority that really is a one-man process for a household, whether it's a household of two or 10. And she's being invited in by proxy, and it's invitation only. So when he says, hey, when the husband says to his wife, or by extension, boyfriend to girlfriend, hey, what's your opinion on this? I'm open to hearing it. He's borrowing from, wells of insight that he thinks might be there. And at any time, she's continuing to offer the insight at his invitation only. So the second that a husband says, okay, no, I have heard this before. Thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm going with this decision, X. And she continues to offer X prime. You're saying what a lot of women will say who don't accept their husband's authority. This surprises me. Maybe I'm hearing it wrong, but no, it's not that I want to usurp your authority. I just want what I want, X prime. That's the soul of usurping authority. She what I'm saying is she has to wait for maybe the next time for him to come and be like, hey, it didn't work out so well that day. I did my thing. I'm gonna try your thing. That'll happen eventually. But if it's to happen patriarchally, it's gotta be one bite of the apple in that moment. What it,
Yeah,
that that seems to
I
be
think
something
I'm
you're
wrong.
objecting to.
I think I'm wrong that it can ever be a good instance. The three things that I'm trying to balance are, does it make her more perfect in submission? Because if not, she won't get to heaven, period. Does it make the man a more effective leader? And does it produce the best outcome? Those are the three things that like I'm always trying to like balance in this.
Yeah, and that's probably, I think, what queers the analysis, because those are all consequence based rather than action based, which are always like what am I deliberating toward a particular end? And morality resides in the not in outcomes, of course. What does it do for her? What does it do for me? What does it do for us? Are your three criteria? It's just the question is, deliberating, okay, how can a wife be involved? Because she does have this capacity. Pius the 12th says she does have this informer capacity, kind of like the US Senate is supposed to have this deliberative thing. It doesn't end up happening. With good marriages, it actually does. But this cannot, the deliberative capacity, if it's to be a concomitant of patriarchy, the wife has to submit to the husband in all things. It no longer becomes an advisory role that's concomitant to the husband's decision making if he's clearly expressed, no, I'm done with this decision. I'm going to go make it. And now she's just saying, no, okay, you want X. You're not any longer in the R&D phase for this idea. You're saying, I'm done. It's over. And I'm still saying, no, second bite of the apple, third bite of the apple. It by definition can't be concomitant to patriarchy, procedurally speaking, if the husband has clearly expressed his will there.
Yeah, that
I
makes
would,
total sense.
yeah,
That
it's,
makes total sense.
and the system works consequentially, Mike and Will, what do you think of this? The system works consequentially if you have two parties of goodwill over a long term to even perfect the capacities of decision making of the husband in efficiency measures. But that's not the main goal. The main goal is today. We want to make sure our marriage is good. We'll get better at making the decisions later. If it re-arises in a week, then it's up to the husband to maybe see, hey, I probably should have gone with, you know, whatever Sally said a week ago. And I'm going to tell her, hey, there is merit to what you said. I'm going to try. And if he doesn't do it, then it'll come up again in a month and maybe a year. And sometimes it takes four or five iterations for the husband to see. But the what you've guaranteed is that he has brought her in. He is openly considering and reconsidering his tracks, his track record. And eventually he'll get to the right decision. But this is only a minority of situations anyway, because women don't have the phronesis capacity, the prudential capacity that husbands do, or else they'd be the leaders in the first place. So by definition, this should be a minority. Does this square with what you were saying, Mike, about bedtime and Will, about big earning decision makings?
I agree with everything you said. I think the only time it would be acceptable to re-engage this conversation is if I chose to do that. If I was sort of having, if through prayer or what have you, or a conversation with a friend or something came up and I was questioning it for whatever reason and I wanted her input, I think it would be acceptable to revisit the conversation, because it would be me bringing that up and not her saying, hey, like something else came to mind. It's like, well, it doesn't matter respectfully, because I've already made the decision.
Of course.
Now, if something came up in subsequent days or weeks or months, that would be worth consideration. I see what Nick's point, and it's hard for me to like disagree. But I think the slippery slope here with like multiple bites in the apple, especially in like one day, well, I mean, that's sort of like you're insidiously losing your authority, or you're allowing the usurping of your authority in the home without you fully even realizing it. It's like, hold firm, revisit the conversation if you deem it necessary to, but the decision is made and she's got to trust you.
With all due respect, I don't think there's anything insidious about it. If you say, look, the conversation's over, and wife says, no, it's not, you know, we're going a second bite of the apple, a third bite, then there's nothing insidious. That's just, you know, she's running the show.
Right. No, what I mean by that is like a complete deconstruction, where eventually like you're just not making any decisions at all, because you've allowed her to not just have a bite of the apple, but consume the apple altogether.
It's what the red pill calls frame. So what you just said, Mike, about, well, if I literally want the conversation to go longer, and I'm like, no, I want to hear, you know, this conversation isn't over. I like your ideas. Continue, you know, send me your newsletter or whatever. Continue making this case. You know, that's the king saying to his war council and peace council, okay, I'm listening to peace council now. I'm listening to war council. If he's king, he can say, I'm done. I heard you each once. Here, there's not a second wife or whatever, but I've heard you each once. I'm done. But if he's like, no, I want this deliberative process to continue, well, that's his authority ratifying the continuation of the conversation. I think what we're doing here has been really, really good dialogically, quadrilogically with four guys, because this is what's meant by one bite of the apple. So of course you're not pissing away your authority, husbands. If you sincerely, you know, some husbands are so controlled by their wives that it's like Stockholm syndrome. So we have to beware that with, you know, that's not any of the guys here, but out there, you can't fudge on what you mean by sincerely. If you sincerely want the conversation to continue and you're asking for her continued advice, fine. But the second you're like, no, I have clarity for today. I'm not saying I'm infallible. I'm not the Roman Catholic, you know, irreformable magisterium. I'm not infallible, but I have clarity as per decision-making today on a go-forward basis. Done. And she's saying, no, but you need this other, I need to reiterate it one more time. That is a direct challenge to the patriarchy. Let me be more stark. That is the only challenge that exists for the patriarchy out there. Marriage by marriage is wife saying, no, you clearly articulated the conversation is over, and I am stronger than you. I have bigger balls than you. And I'm saying the conversation is going to continue and you're going to hear it. So I would anyway, will or anyone respond to that?
Like I said, I think all the principles in discussion are super important here. I would just call it the like the husband has the final say rule. I don't really care how long that discussion goes on for. It can be a back and forth that might last all day. And in that sense, in which I was understanding bites at the apple, you know, if she might get 100 chances to express her opinion, and if the man thinks that's productive, yeah, go at it, keep talking. The most important thing is he has the final say. Like the counting, like being just one bite of the apple, I think that confuses matters. If he has the final say, then I don't care how many times they go back and forth over it. What I find, because of my stubbornness, is that sometimes her just saying something once isn't enough. I need to hear it a few times. I'm still open to the conversation, and I still have the final say, and it's beneficial for it to be done that way. So I wouldn't want any guys listening to this thinking that once their wife has said one thing and then you have the chance to respond, if she then says, hey, I still think you're missing this, and then you listen, talk some more, and it might go on 10 times, that's not a problem. As long as you are the one who actually makes the decision, she respects that once you've made it. So that's the nuance that I want to bring out. Otherwise, there'll be some guys listening who will think, oh, if I listen to her opinion more than once, then that's not masculine.
That's an important point of clarification, because the way what I was establishing this conversation on was after the conversation is done and she's shared all of her thoughts. So maybe I'm interpreting it as Will is interpreting the bites of the apple as her opinions. But Tim, the way that I'm understanding, the way that you're putting this forth is after this conversation, after she's shared all of her thoughts, boom, you have the final say. All of the thoughts have been shared at that point, in which case, like, I agree with both of you.
Yeah.
It's not like one shot in and it's like, nope, that one shot, you get just one bite. Like, this is where I agree with Will. This is where it would get confusing for some guys. Just as a point of clarification, Tim, like, this is a conversation, this is a dialogue. She could share multiple thoughts on the matter. Me, much like Will, I'm a stubborn, hot-headed dude. Sometimes I have to have this ongoing conversation. And then, but at the end of it, the final say is still mine. Is that what you're saying as well?
No, this is different. And that's fine. That's the whole point of CMASC. Like, you know, what I'm tendering is actually quite clear. The danger is, as already articulated, you know, the wife controlling the frame. And with a lot of guys out there that have been in these marriages 5, 10, 15 years that are feminist, they're gaslit. They're going, we're talking about simple everyday decisions. Should we go to my mom and dad's now, or should we go in an hour? And these are not, this is not reading through books two and through three of the Dante et Essentia. You know, this is not hard stuff. So reiterations are normally precisely what's problematic. And it is basic. It's more a matter of the will, husband and wife will, than the intellect. You know, it's not like, oh, I saw, you know, this is prescinding from humanity, not prescinding from man. Really hard stuff will require study. 99% of these decisions, and again, it's fine for us to legitimately disagree about this, require, you know, if the wife's like, but I don't want, and what it usually is 99% of the time is a wife saying, no, I don't want to go over to your parents right now. Let's go over after my show or something. There's not any need for her to fully unpack. Now, if she had, Mike, you just said she gets to, some sort of marital constitutional right, say everything she wants in defense of that view. No, I would strongly say that violates the principle. You know, like,
I think
because the most important feature of it is actually the husband having the final say on when the conversation stops. That's actually what this red pill term of frame is. So if the husband says, she gets one sentence in, never interrupt in sentence, right? I sincerely try never to do this in marriage, never interrupt mid sentence, but discretion holds. You can interrupt the paragraph. If you see this as going a prolix paragraph about why we should stay and watch another Netflix show, there's nothing new being presented. You hold as the patriarch, the discretionary authority to say, I'll let you finish the sentence, but we're going now, you know, get your stuff. And again, this is not really this is not a fixture in my household. This doesn't come up. But no, I would say the main difference between what I hear you guys offering and everyone might have his own, we might get four iterations of it, but I'm arguing strongly for this as sort of the author of the rule. I don't think it has any weaknesses.
I think Mike, the difference you just
said, you're imputing it to Will, like on each matter in life, and there's, you know, 100 daily things you do together, and wives argue about all of them in most people's households, not ours. She gets to be fully heard. That's precisely what the feminist wives are out there saying. The husband can say, no, I heard the first sentence. This is not something we need to discuss anymore. So most often it actually will be one bite of the apple, but the bite of the apple ends when he says it does. So if he's
right,
inviting,
but I also
more
don't. Yeah, I don't disagree with that either.
Fine, of course.
Right. If I think it's like a prudent thing to drag out and to talk about at length, then we will do so, where this is that dialogue will continue. But I don't disagree. I think if it's like one sentence in, I'm like, you know what? No, I actually don't need to hear anything at all. The decision's made.
Which is most
that
of
will
the
also.
I think we're typifying it. I probably did a bad job typifying. We're talking about this contest of the will. Like, let's go for a walk now, because this is what it is. Let's go for a walk now. Me and Steph do a daily walk. And she's like, oh, could we please? Because we just put pen down for a nap. I'll be like, okay, that's cool. Or if I'm like, nah, I'm too busy later. I don't feel like it. Let's go now. Steph knows, oh, okay. Norm, 9 times out of 10, if she goes, I just put pen down, or oh, it'll be warmer this part of the day, or something, whatever. 9 times out of 10, I'll probably go, okay, that's fine. That was your one bite. And I'll usually grant it. I'm a pretty laid back dude. Contrary to what people will say about me out in the papers, when it comes to patriarchy, I'm pretty laid back. But if it's that 1 out of 5, 1 out of 10 times where I was like, no, I have too much shit to do. I want to do this now. Steph knows. She's like, okay, well, I guess I'll get the stroller out and we'll just bring Penny, or we'll whatever. There's a second bite from that apple would be the precise sort of trouble, the precise sort of harm sought to be prevented.
I think this can be clarified if we just answer the question, what is the higher good, frame or outcome?
Always frame, of course. Yeah, good. I mean, that's for anybody who's unclear on it. Yeah, it's of course frame. Like, I'm not a fucking lifestyle coach. I'm not telling you how. Maybe I'm not the most efficient guy. I'm not telling people out there, I can definitely make you earn more, or, you know, earn $1 million in a week or any of that stuff. Like, I can't, but if you follow this and there's buy-in when you're laying this out with your wives or even your girlfriends, I can solve 99% of your arguments. And it's by understanding what a man is and what a woman is, and how we're supposed to play together when a woman does have this imperfected rational capacity. She's got the same. Edith Stein, people have to understand the metaphysics. Edith Stein wanted to make a separate quiddity or like specific difference for a woman than for a man, which we're tempted to do, but we're not. Our specific difference is rational animal. Women just engage as rationality in a partialer way. And so, like Pius XII says, we should be, it's better to have two minds on problems, even though there's only one head, the husband's head, have a wife's mind on the problem. It's only become an externality in the last 100 years with feminism when wives are like, no, I'm not done speaking. That's what they'll always say. If you give them this grant, Mike, so say, well, I haven't fully expressed my mind, or I did it and it took 10 minutes and you wanted to be gone 9 minutes ago. We wanted to go over to the in-laws, but it's going to take 10 more minutes and then 10 more minutes. This is the heart. This is what's rotting out matrimony. You see, is frame.
And I think, and again, what most guys,
to reiterate, frame just means discretionary authority.
Yeah, and most guys don't possess the frame to handle if and when their wives buck up against it, and you're like, this conversation's over, and they're like, no, this conversation's over. They don't want to deal with their wives' emotions that may happen after that hammers. This is also, this is a really important conversation to really spell out. I hate nuanced conversations, but if there's one to nuance and talk about, it's this one. Because guys are retarded.
Yeah.
They're retarded. Yeah. And they need to be told what to do. And like every, and this is also under the assumption that they don't have a working wife. If you want authority over your wife, like, and she's working and she's subject to another man's authority, you have no authority over your wife. So like, that's got to be clear. We're all in agreement with that, right? Because guys are going to ask that too. Like, I'll have guys that are like stay-at-home dads or like, how can I be a patriarch? You can't. You can't be. Like, next topic. Like, this is basic. This is like 101.
Yes. Yeah.
But the fact is, guys don't know how to deal with those emotions. So they eventually just capitulate because they don't want to hear the bitching and the nagging and the annoyance that comes after that. It's like, well, that's part and parcel for the job sometimes. Because even like the best wives sometimes will get like that. And you just have to learn how to deal with it.
Well, because let's not try to be macho. It's scary. It's scary. Who's the head of the home? You are. Who's the heart of the home? Your wife. This is like every pope in the 20th century. So if you haven't habituated her, as women will say of their men, trained her to one bite of the apple, and you're going to get either a silent or a very voluminous protest for holding your God-given frame to saying, no, I want this conversation to end. Yeah, I know it's fast, but it's not brain surgery. It's, do we go over to the in-laws right now? Or do we go for a walk right now? No more analysis is needed. That's an 8-second conversation when a man has it. We'll go or we'll not go. Maybe I'll try something different in the future, but today we're going. There will be, with a non-habituated, virtue-habituated woman, there will be a very loud or a very silent protest or a protest of any sort in between. It might be the silent treatment. She might not yell, but that's scary because that is the heart of the home saying, I'm going to give you coronary trouble, right? I'm going to fibrillate. I'm going to give you, I'm going to make it feel like you're having a heart attack right now. And that's what it is, whether it's a proper heart attack or just, what do they call it? Not fibrillations, when you get palpitations, you know? Palpitations can be scary. And I'm just going to put everything on pause, and I might not do it by screaming and yelling. I might do it through silence. I'm the first guy to admit, when I was first married, if I say the worst day in the last 2 years or something, even after habituating this stuff and everyone kind of knows their place in my household, everyone screws up. It's scary because your happiness, the wife is far closer to the hearth, the heart, the happiness, all these H's. And so even a silent protest if I hold to principle here, the principle is really, this is not a long conversation. Men know this. I need to stand on my own authority here. It's not the problem in America is the fear of the heart attack that will come as a punishment. It's not ego, Mike. Most men are not leaning into their own ego like the Stone Age. That's the feminist sort of pseudo history. Women do not need to be heard from more. That's not true. And they need to be heard from less, particularly when we're talking about what does chapter 2 of the De Ante mean? You know, maybe your wife studied it more than you. That's not what anyone's arguing about at home. What they're arguing about at home is, come on, honey, let's get the kids in the car. We're going to go now. I don't want to go later. And so it's just will anyway. There's nothing of the intellect involved in it.
I'm curious if Will didn't listen, if the first one or two bites from his wife, let's just extrapolate. He takes maybe not job one, but he takes job two that comes along. And job two was like really not the best move for his family. Can you guys both just, for me, extrapolate out then how that plays out with respect to this rule? Good, bad, whatever.
But ultimately, I end up getting a new job. But the way I'm understanding this one bite now is that really what frame consists in is that the husband has to have the final say and the conversation's over when he says it is. And that might be after she's expressed her opinion once, or it might be 10 times. the key thing is that he has to say, okay, that's it, I'm making a decision now. Not necessarily after just once. Have I understood that correctly?
Are you asking me, Will?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, if let's go with some specific example, like let's go for a walk now. What is there new rational thought content that even could, even if a guy is kind of trained to okay, I'm going to listen to 10 new reasons why we shouldn't go now, all because, let's say, the wife in question, it's John and Sally. Sally doesn't want to go for a walk now. She wants to go later. What possible new rational thought content could there be besides, like, I just don't want to do it? That's 99% of household decisions reduced to husband wants to do it. He has the discretionary authority and he has the better practical reason on the average. Wife does not want to. I just don't know why a wife even, unless it's a very, very rare, abstruse kind of decision, why there would need to be 10 takes at something. Like, well, let's go for a walk. No, I don't want to because I'm watching my show. No, I don't want to because I'm watching my program. No, I mean, were we just, is she just spitting synonyms at him? That's what I think most of these wives are doing.
I think, well, I just keep getting hung up on outcome. Sorry, go, Will.
You could invent all kinds of reasons why there's a conversation to be had there, because there's some information that the husband's not aware of. And she's like, I want to go for a walk. Oh, why is that? My foot hurts. Oh, okay, I didn't know that. And then there's a conversation about that and whether it's worth it or not. And she ends up expressing her opinion more than once, but he still has the final say. Like, you can give tons of examples like that about lots of things day to day.
Sure, but so because people tend to use their best, driest shot first, and then it would be because my foot hurts. I mean, if your wife is not tends towards honesty and not being dramatic, you know, you're kind of just a dick if you're like, all right, we're exercising still. I mean, if plantar fasciitis. Actually, Steph has been having plantar fasciitis from walking the nearly 5 miles a day. And I'm always the one that's like, you decide. Literally, this is a real, real, actual thing. She's had it for 2 months. I'm always like, you decide to go today. And Steph's tough. She's always like, I'm not exercising because of this. So, okay, cool. Let's go. But that's the one bite of the apple. If you're like, no, let's go. And she says, well, yeah, I was kind of exaggerating about my foot. But another reason is I want to watch this show. And they're like, okay, I already said, let's go. I'm just,
yeah.
What the system does is it assumes some basic assumptions about human nature. People use their best. Usually they're only motivated by one primary thing, one primary motivant. And they tend to say it first in the most muscular form they can up front. And people's lives out in the burbs are pretty basic. It's pretty much stuff like husband wants to do this, wife wants to do that. So I do think men on the whole out there, because most people have this real problem of feminism. You're kind of debating means here. Nick, you're rebutting on ends. And I guess I think this is really good. This is why I wanted to do this show today. I think 99% of the men, or 99.9% of the men, it's just, yeah, there needs to be less talk. There needs to be a robust instantiation of the man's frame. And the wife doesn't need to give her opinion endlessly on when to go to the in-laws, or, you know, what to get at the store or whatever. I don't think there's 10 possible rational arguments that could be rethrown and reiterated at most of the situations that are coming up in daily life.
A similar instance as you, Tim, with the plantar fasciitis. I said to my wife, I was like, you should come to the gym with me. I think it'll be good. You get time to stretch, do like yoga type stuff. Just feel good. She's like, I don't want to go. And when I asked why, there actually wasn't a really good answer there. And what I've found a lot of times, kind of generally, is that women don't quite know why they think what they think or feel what they feel. And it actually requires help to get to the bottom of why they're thinking or feeling what they are. And this is something that Peterson talks about, that you should, men have obviously a higher degree of rationality, but also a better ability to put thoughts and emotions into words. And so it's partly your job to help her articulate herself, to steel man her position, which I found it not only takes patience, but also some humility, because if I want a certain outcome, I don't want to steel man her argument. But I think it's really helpful to say, okay, so are you saying this, this, and this, because it's going to make you feel this way, and this is really important to you? Is that what you're saying? You know, yes, no. Okay, iterate on that. So I think bites might look different because she probably needs help some of the time. And so even that first, this is one point where I would disagree, that first fire, that first shot that she's going to say, I don't want to do it because this. It might be like actually like her fourth or seventh reason that's like the real reason. And it still could be a not good one, but like it's kind of worth that investigative process to figure out what, like, where she's actually coming from on that.
Mm-hmm. What did it end up being? See, I think this is, I think this is a, I'm not even going to say slippery slope. I think this is a failure at setting frame then. What did it end up being? Something really important? Because
it was a feeling. It was, I want to stay in. You could say it was laziness basically. And I ended up saying, so you're going to go. And I know this is going to be good for you. And then it totally was. And she was really happy with that decision. So like I did maintain the frame. The purpose of that example was just that I had to basically explain to her what she was thinking. And because she didn't know. And I think that's the case a lot of times, is like there's just sort of a reaction. And you have to like walk them through it or not. I mean, maybe you don't have the time for that or the energy, but I think it can be useful, because otherwise a lot of times they'll feel very shortchanged.
And through doing that, you can make them feel heard, build trust better, and also end up having an even stronger frame, because you're showing that you can go deeper, still get that final say, which is the key thing for me anyway. But the making the woman feel heard, the building the trust, improving the connection, those are all things that you achieve better with a longer discussion than just saying, oh, excuse me, that's your one bite, discussion over.
But who's in the position to make the call, whether or not it's actually a worthwhile conversation? The man, the husband. So like if it was, I just don't want, I mean, on, if this were me, honestly, and you know, I love your wife very much. But if it were, I just don't want to go to the gym. I would just assume it's laziness, right? Or just whatever you ended up saying it was. I would just assume it's why. I might say, do you have a splitting headache or why? And then if it's like, I really don't want to go. Like, I feel like, Nick, you started out saying that there might be some really important emotive thing, a phenomenon that needs to be unpacked there. And it wasn't, it was just precisely what, because like I said, it's built into the principle. People use their best shot first, of course. So I don't think you probably could have gotten back those 10 minutes. Now you're master of your domain. So you chose to do it that day, and that's fine. You ended up not having a temper tantrum or a big fight. But because you're the guy, I'm gonna stick you to this, because you're the guy that's been harping on outcomes. The outcome, once guys habituate their wives to, yeah, I mean, like the terminological thing doesn't matter. It is about finality of say, but I do encourage guys to quicken that process. And once, you know, if your wife is recently coming off of feminism or your whatever, your wife is not Nick, but you're also newly married. You just want to, this is what I have to say to outcome determination. You do want the process of trust, and you get it from every once in a while having the extended conversation, but you presumably a man with a good reason, with good practical reason, is going to be indulging wherever he wants the more extended conversations, not every time. And what I heard, I can't remember who it was saying, maybe Mike, and then Mike said, well, that's not what I meant. Like, she gets to have her full say on everything, That sounds like the old model. That is the old model. That's the feminism. Like, because women always will say, no, you haven't heard me out yet. And then they just keep going, keep it on. And it's just become a Martin Luther, not that silent protest. So the words, the reason that I think this conversation has been so profitable is because two or all three of you guys started out saying, okay, the deliberative process is a truly deliberative process. Even if wives are having conscientious objections to even the most basic decisions that a husband's already made that are not intended to be deliberative. You guys did so saying there's a basically epistemological basis. Like there needs to be something that, you know, you're mining for gold. And if you have a 20 minute conversation about just what the husband's already decided, let's just go to the in-laws now and get it out of the way rather than later. Well, I want later. Okay. It's basically a 50-50. There's nothing that's going to be mined out of that. And that's most household decisions. So it's a voluntary matter. It's not an epistemological matter. It's a matter of the will. And who's in the best position to make the call on, like, no, this is really important for the emotional or spiritual development of my wife. We had one of these the other day where it's like, no, I think we should actually talk about this. This is something kind of coming out from your childhood. Maybe it's a harm, maybe it's a hurt. Let's go deep on this. And then, I mean, some of the times that might be you lengthening out a conversation that initially you wanted to be short. Some of the time it'll be you reacting to her wanting it to be more lengthy, and you're reacting in real time. Oh, no, I do want to hear what you're saying. That doesn't violate one bite of the apple, because the real bite of the apple is, you know, like G.K. Chesterton, once you close your jaws on it, this conversation's over. You see what I mean about epistemological? I don't think there's any wisdom coming out in homes across Western civilization when wives are prying open the jaws and keeping the conversations going. It's just them trying to get their way because men are scared of the backlash.
This is my last bite of the apple of trying to frame it for myself to try and understand this. The way I see the landscape at present is if we're talking about the middle 70% of the bell curve, not the super terrible cases and not the really exemplary cases, that most men have been formed to be worthless leaders, and most women have been formed to be unsubmissive, to feel as if they were leaders. And when you put those people together, what I can't tell yet is if the best path out is for them to, if a man genuinely doesn't have the capacity to lead, and the woman is very not practiced at submission, to have them lead and follow. And maybe that's I don't know the answer to that. I think if I'm understanding correctly, Tim, you're saying that it is, that if the woman submits and the man just tries his best, basically, that things will be more harmonious. Where I get hung up on is, yeah, but like, what if they end up on the street because he's retarded, like he has no prudence.
But sorry, yeah, no, I heard you say that I started thinking about, and I was trying to process the rest. But you said the middle 70%, not the worst, not the best, and I'm thinking the middle 98% are all the worst. I mean, these men are leading lives of quiet desperation, as Thoreau said. You got the 1% that I think abide this more or less, and that, you know, they're happy living lives of marital bliss. You got the 1% on the bottom where there's physical harms going one or both ways. Then you have the 98% of men in the middle where they don't have authority. I mean, it's a nominal authority because we're talking about conversations. That's what marriage is. It's one long series of conversations. Even comedians have tried to slur marriage. This is one long series of conversations. And so this is not some niche of marriage. How you deal with conversations is your authority, right? You're not Attila the Hun. You're not going to go muscle her into, you know, that's the bottom 1%. That's the police are involved. It's all just how you tender conversations. And if guys have any, I mean, a corpuscle of unclarity on this most basic issue, then you're going to lose your authority. I think it's that simple. It's if you cannot at any time, you know, I mean, this is with your best friend whose advice you want more than anyone else's in the world, your wives. First off, that's absolutely true for me. There's no one I'm looking to faster in most situations. And Steph, what do you think of this? People know, cause you know, she's come on the show. But I'm unique in that. Cause I think there's real wisdom to be had from my wife. And I've even tried to not be parsimonious and share some of that on selected shows. That's why people have heard her. But absolutely that presupposes that I'm like, no, I know where this is going. And at this point I can see like, no, I don't need to hear the rest of this. And most of the time, you know, thanks. I got what the premise is. I'm sure there's not some gold nugget four premises back that you stuck to fifth in the line. Thanks. Instead, it's like, no, you're right. Okay. That's fine. We'll do it your way. You're the boss. If it's anything short of that, call it what you want to call it. Then it is a frame thing. It's not some niche conversational issue like, oh, we do conversations different in my household. This is what people will all try to say in coaching. It is an issue because marriage is just a bunch of conversations serially considered. So I don't know what I didn't get the potential. If you wind up on the streets because a man won't work, then you know that's obviously a man failing in his duty to provide if he just won't go to work. I don't understand. That's just a different show. Like, men, you have to work. You got to do something legal and profitable. But this, I don't see what this has to do with the wife's duty to be home and to be submissive.
I'm just calling it the man has the final say rule. And I think that the woman can be heard better sometimes when the man hears from her more than once. And that's cool. As long as he has the final say, I think that can strengthen marriages more sometimes because it builds trust better. So as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I've been saying this for an hour. If the man has the final say, then frame's maintained. For some guys who are coming out of a very bad situation and are married at age 30 to boss babes, as a corrective measure, I think what Tim's saying has got some wisdom to it. But for people to listen, get hung up on it literally being one bite where that's interpreted, she has her opinion once, I think that could do some damage. So I'm not putting my go ahead to that. Maybe it's good for you, maybe it's not. But the final say thing and making her feel heard, yeah, completely. I think that's critical.
And yeah, I think this is one of those things where experience dictates a lot, where most of these decisions, it'll come to you making a decision rather quickly. But there's going to be things that come up inevitably where things do need to be parsed out a little bit more. And I think it's most of the time, Tim, it's probably as you see it, because most of these decisions and conversations are short ones. So it's not like we have to sit there and have a huge dialogue about it. But I think there's a place where, you know, what Will said, and that's how I, you know, run my household, is some of these, let's say, medium or bigger size decisions, we'll sit there and talk about it, not for an hour or 3 hours or anything like that, but there'll be some discussion back and forth. And ultimately, you know, the conclusion is mine to make, the decision is mine to make. So it's kind of a, I don't know if there's such thing as a both and answer.
Well, as long as people understand that situation Mike described can fall under the one bite of the apple rule, as long as it's interpreted in that way, then that's fine. Otherwise, I don't want people listening to be misled into thinking that this really literal interpretation of the rule is how I run my marriage, or how Mike runs his, or Nick, or whatever. So that's the key thing. There's more than one way to apply the principle. The man must have the final say, though. That's the non-negotiable for me.
But I mean, like, when I laid it out at the beginning, I said all of that, like I defined it. So I'm just sincerely trying to tell whether Mike and Will, whether you guys are demurring on a point or whether or not you're stipulating to a point.
Let's make it super clear then. You can go back and forth as many times as a man wants to, as long as he has the final say. That's it.
Sure. But as a practical matter, which is literally how I pitched it at the opening, right? That's what I said. It's up to the man. And I said, sometimes if it's an intellectual matter where there's more to be mined and he's the one making that decision, it's absolutely non-violative of the idea. He says, I mean, this is based on how many times does a man have to say this conversation is over? But what I'm left wondering is, because again, you guys were kind of pitching it as demurring, which is cool. I think those are I sincerely believe those are the better shows. But then kind of saying like, well, we agree. What I'm trying to mine whether or not you're demurring and what the implications are for maybe something I need to reconsider. But
so
what I don't know is
which
you guys
bit of
think.
The man having the final say is unclear.
No, what's the relative occurrence, Will? What do you think is the relative occurrence of frequency? How often there needs to be household decisions? Let's have lunch now or in an hour. Let's do that. The things that people really argue about in real life. How frequently do you think there should be 10 volleys? You know, like, oh, but here's another reason I want to do it now. Like, because I think what we're disagreeing about is the relative minority. I think that's very rare that you need to hear 10 volleys.
Well, I suppose as long as the man has the final say, then frames up held. So it doesn't bother me too much.
But I mean, do you think that let's just go with Mike Orwell or Nick. I'm just curious at this point because it's been something we seems to be a point of contention, which is cool. Do you think, is it greater than, let's start with 50-50. Let's say type A decision. This is just a Will thing. Not Will, William, but this is just a voluntary matter or a true sort of emotive epistemological thing where we need we really need to haggle this out deliberatively like a Senate or something. Because I think both of those exist. Now, is it 99-1? Probably closer to that. You guys have argued for it as if the majority, it sounded to me like the majority of decisions you think are more intellectually important, epistemologically relevant, you need to get to them. And that's, I think, where we're disagreeing. So I'm just asking Mike, Will, Nick, where do you, if you had to estimate the relative portion of where you need, where a wise husband, will use the reasonable man standard, the perfectly reasonable husband will suffer a second, a third, a fourth volley back and forth. No, I want to hear you because it's still open. How frequent do you think those are? I think they're very infrequent, that kind of disagreement.
For me personally, it's going to decrease, but right now I think it's closer. It's closer to half. I don't think it's half. It's closer to half than I think it will be in a year.
Why?
Like, it's probably going to go because like I am still figuring out like, for honestly, how to relate to this person. It's more of a relationship thing than it is like a prudence thing. I think like I am still figuring out like who this person is and how to like cohabitate emotionally and relationally. So I think it's probably, it's not definitely not half. I think it's closer to half and it will be closer to like 99% within a year. It might go from like 60% to like 90% would be my estimation.
That's fair. What do you think, Mike? And well, if you had to guesstimate.
I feel like I'd just be pulling a number out of my ass, to be quite honest. I think it's.
Well, I mean, do you think
I've never thought of
it's like,
no, it's not the majority of the time. I can put it to you that way, or half. It's not even half. It's definitely not half the time either. Maybe at first, like Nick, it was closer to maybe half because I was just learning how to be a man in a household, cohabitating with a woman that I'm married to.
I agree.
It's
yeah,
not
I
even
think
a quarter of
that.
The time. It's definitely not a quarter of the time either. It's like the the vast majority, these decisions are made quickly, and it's not like a back and forth huge dialogue. Like, absolutely not. I mean, Will, what would you say the percentage in your household? I'm trying to land on a number, and it's hard to, but it's definitely less than a quarter. It's definitely not half. The majority of these things are dealt with rather quickly, but yeah, it's hard, man.
Yeah, I don't think it even matters percentage wise, and in general, it probably will decrease over time. Although I can see some situations where you might have things running really smoothly, and then you have like triplets or something, and then the percentage goes up because things are more stressful, more up in the air. But the general like principle here is that, well, as often as the man wants those discussions, simple as that.
Yeah. That's really well that's said.
The first general principle. The second general principle is, it sounds like all of us agree that even a reasonable man usually won't be suffering these lengthy, prolix conversations, which are cloaked as deliberative, but are really just the expressed will of a woman who doesn't want to accept no for an answer, or at least wants to throw her elbow some. You know, the way mouthy teens will, like, oh, I'm just going to make my dad go around about this for 15 minutes. As long as we agree that if that's happening the majority of the time in John Smith's household, then that's a sort of usurpation and a sort of false cloak for just a rebellion. And as long as I'm not even saying as long as it's fine to brook legitimate disagreement. These are complex matters as they play out, but sounds like the four of us are agreeing to a secondary principle. That's an as applied principle. That's like, this shouldn't be happening much, that a man of goodwill, of good intellect, is brooking all this discussion. Because women are relatively simple minded around the home place, straightforward minded. They want what they want. And most of these conversations do not involve some abstract matter that would even bear rational thought content in reiterated or triiterated form. I don't know the exact matter either. I was just asking you guys to estimate, because it's kind of like, you know, if you ask me what percentage of NBA games are won by buzzer beaters, I don't know the exact number, but I know that it's the exception to the rule. Probably, and I just use the word 99% for the rule. Maybe it's 98% of the games aren't won by a buzzer beater. I'm estimating, but I was estimating because when we were getting all into it earlier, I'm just saying, I think this is maybe the exception swallowing the rule, because the rule is what's happened across all of Western civilization is female usurpation of the throne in the home. And it happens conversationally. It doesn't happen any other way. They're not beating their husbands in arm wrestles. It's happening in conversations. And the failure that everybody is, the harm that everybody was saying, oh, we don't want this harm to be what we're communicating, I think is vastly, vastly, vastly orders of magnitude less frequent. A man just being kind of the domineering caveman asshole. The same thing the feminists say. I think what's happening is, under the auspices of, well, I just want to be fully heard, kind of emotional manipulation, you know, in the typical households, I'm not talking about any of ours, then guys are like, well, I can't just cut off this conversation. It's simple. It's, you know, are we doing X right now? Just get in the car, please. You know? So I think the reason it was good to tease out was because we generally say exception makes bad law. We don't want the exception to swallow the rule here. That's why I was pursuing that, just for clarity's sakes. Also, I think it's a better show when we disagree, but that's why I was teasing, following that tease thread, if that makes sense. Well,
yeah, it makes sense to me. I don't think there's any confusion. So frame means having the final say. I don't think there's any way a guy can hear that and get it wrong.
Sure. Any final thoughts, Nick, Mike? Well, I guess I would say there's the frame means having the final say, and don't be gaslit, men, into giving up the final say, which is sort of a secondary matter. The principle is, yeah, this is all about who has the final say for what we're doing substantively, and then procedurally when the so-called deliberation ends. And that's where I think a lot of, that's where I'd say probably 99% of the guys lose the thread, particularly in Christian homes where the wives, and this is why I thought it's so important to go over this, because a lot of Christian wives, Protestant, Catholic, whatever, know, hey, I have to, the Bible says I have to submit to him. I have to, you know, in all things, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just going to make these conversations long and emotionally charged. And I'm just going to kind of wear away from him, like the steady process of erosion. And this is what's happening to guys. And I think when they know, I think they need to be re-empowered to say, no, the conversation's over. I don't think that's happening too much. I think it's happening too little. I'll give you guys the final say though. Anyone who wants it.
No additional thoughts here besides, I think it was a great discussion. I also think, not enough discussion on these, like sort of these type of more, I guess I hate using the word nuance, but I guess some of these discussions can be a little bit more nuanced, like we displayed here in a good and masculine and, exploratory way to kind of get to the heart of what we're all trying to say. And I think we're kind of all in agreement for the most part, but I think we should do another one on this. I think this deserves a part two.
Yeah. Nick said, well, I'm going to use my last bite of the apple. And I was going to say, well, you're not my wife, Nick, but there is if we were to do some part two sometime in the future, it would be interesting because it is kind of the way the rule works, where then people go away, maybe think about it, maybe synthesize some, absorb the comments of the other three bros, and maybe apply stuff, maybe don't, maybe all four of us do that. And then you come back a month later and it isn't, it proves my point I was saying earlier, that it's not a second bite of the apple. It might actually be a completely different conversation, because if I were to come to you guys and be like, oh, I applied this that you were saying, it totally worked. Then it's a new conversation where the position on the mountain has shifted. Now we're beginning here. We were beginning here before. That's why it doesn't violate the one bite of the apple rule to, if this conversation rehappens in a year or in 6 months or even in 6 days, usually it rehappens because the circumstances are new and people have sort of reapprised their positions. So anyway, I think it was a worthwhile exercise, and hopefully CMAS viewers out there got something from it. Remember always to please like and to subscribe and to leave a comment here. This is a procedural show today, so I'd be interested in actually reading the comments. When I do news shows, it's like, the comments are just like, yeah, Francis is blank. But with this kind of stuff, do leave a comment. It helps us a lot, helps the channel to grow. And God bless everyone out there. Thank you guys for engaging with us.
God bless you guys. Awesome episode. Take care. Later.
See ya.